John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. Well, there's no question that Pope Francis has rapidly transformed the Catholic Church and continues to do so. He's been outspoken about the Church's mission and vision and about many other things. On a trip to the Holy Land, he surprised us all again with several dramatic gestures aimed at finding some sort of peace in the Middle East. Well, we're going to talk about Pope Francis and his shrewd brand of diplomacy this hour on the Kathleen Dunn Show. My guest is Elizabeth Dias, a correspondent for Time, based in Washington, D.C., where she covers religion and politics. Elizabeth Dias, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so Pope Francis, wow, I mean, talk about hitting the ground running. He seems like someone who's in a terrible hurry to get things done. How would you characterize him?
Well, you know, he's only been in office, elected last spring, so for a group, a religious group that tends to mark change in centuries, not months or much less weekends, certainly Pope Francis has been making lots of news, as this past weekend evidenced to us all.
Is he just doing this on his own, or I mean, how? What kind of? What's the feeling within the Catholic Church hierarchy? Because, I mean, you know, yes, obviously the Pope is the head of the Church, but traditionally he's had to answer to, at least behind the scenes, to the Church leadership, the cardinals and so forth. What has been that relationship, and is he acting on his own, or is this where the Church really wants to go?
You know, it's such a good question, and I think it's one of the parts about him that's just so exciting, both for people inside the Church and for folks who may not be very familiar with Catholic tradition. But I think I personally think that there's this, there could be this tension inside the Curia. The Curia in Rome is sort of a hard group to predict or look into from afar. But I think it's important to recognize that the Catholic Church really isn't a monolithic group, and especially as we're having global shifts demographically in the rise of the Spanish-speaking Catholic Church and the Church in Africa, Southeast Asia, we're starting to see even more that cultural differences are impacting how the Church sees itself in these regions. And Pope Francis, coming from Argentina, is really giving voice to some of those local needs in new ways.
And not only coming from Argentina, but coming from a Jesuit background, which there haven't been that many popes who were Jesuits. And that's sort of the missionary education arm, as I understand it, in terms of Catholic tradition. A little bit of an unusual thing there. So, I mean, the choice of Pope Francis to begin with was a surprise, and then he continues to surprise us just about every other day. I don't recall a pope making as many headlines in his first year as pope as Pope Francis has.
It's true. And another few characteristics of Jesuits is the emphasis on humility, which is something, not that other popes haven't emphasized, but that we're really seeing in very concrete, tangible, small, and big daily ways with Pope Francis. And also the Jesuits really value communal consultation, so gathering key advisors around when making important decisions. And we've seen that exactly with Pope Francis, the way he soon established what we all are calling the G8 of cardinals, or his top eight cardinals from around the world that he's been bringing to the Vatican basically every 2 months, starting in the fall, to guide him on key decisions. And that is very related to, of course, his own humility and knowing that he is the top leader, but that he really can't do it on his own, and that emphasis towards wisdom, I think, is very refreshing to many people who are watching him.
800-642-1234 is the number to call. I think a lot of people are going to want to weigh in on Pope Francis and what he's done in his first year as the head of the Catholic Church. 800-642-1234, talk@WPR.org is the email address. You can also leave a comment or question on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. In your article about the Pope's visit to the Holy Land, You said only a holy father like Francis could have pulled off a stunt like this. Did you mean that no other pope could, or that only the pope could have done it?
I really mean only the pope could have done what he did, especially at visiting the separation barrier when he was in Bethlehem. And the fact that he could, you know, he stops his pope mobile, gets out, walks over to the wall underneath graffiti saying Bethlehem and Free Palestine, and beneath is very symbolic moment. You know, he's beneath an Israeli watchtower on his way to Mass. And, you know, there are very few symbols in the world visually that carry such political weight like that wall when we're talking about the Middle East. And so the fact that he could rearrange the whole agenda and all of the talking points just through a very simple prayer and action carries such weight and is one of the standout points I think people will remember about the trip, just like then later when he paused again in an unplanned moment and started kissing the hands of Holocaust survivors. You know, these are such powerful visual symbols. And I think we also have to remember he's the first Holy Father really in this new social media age. Pope Benedict didn't access those tools as much. I mean, and Twitter had really just begun at that point, even at the end of his time. So we're seeing that combination of Pope Francis picking these very powerful visual symbolic moments, and then knowing in his savvy way that this is going to go viral really across the internet, which it did.
Well, do you think that these moves are calculated or inspired?
Oh, when you're talking about a spiritual leader like that, you know, I never would want to say they're not inspired. Just with respect and deference to the tradition from which they're coming, and Pope Francis has made it very clear that the journey was a pilgrimage, was a spiritual focus. At the same time, I think we have to remember that he came to leadership and maturity, really, in Argentina during the Dirty War. And that when you look back at some of the history of the Jesuits and the Catholic Church during that time, he certainly knows the importance of making political decisions and what his actions would mean. So I think we're seeing the intersection of those two things.
So Pope Francis successfully invites President Abbas and President Peres to join him in the Vatican to pray for peace. I mean, I don't know. I don't think bold is a strong enough word necessarily, but I'm trying to think of one that would be better. It certainly was stunning. And it was almost like a forehead slapping moment. You know, well, why didn't we see this happen before? Because once he did it, it just seemed so logical that the Pope would invite these two men to the Vatican. And how do you say no to the Pope? What has been? Let's try to characterize all the reaction that's taken place since then. It was almost like the world kind of went, "Oh wow, that just happened."
Right, exactly. And I think many people had the reaction that, you know, you're outlining. You know, it's at once so simple and so complicated and pulled off so seamlessly that it makes perfect sense. And it's in complete keeping with the ethic and the style that he's been presenting so far. But when you think about it, I mean, what more powerful sign will there be than these two leaders praying together in what really will be a neutral space at the Vatican? I can't really imagine it being very easy to figure out how to do that anywhere else but there. And then I just think from sort of the political angle that he announced, that Pope Francis announced that he was inviting them in the middle of a homily. It was almost just perfect, you know, and then within an hour, both leaders had accepted. And I think, too, because Perez's term is going to expire in less than 2 months, it adds a level of urgency to that meeting, and there's reports that it might happen even as soon as early June. So it's not like when you have political talks that get announced and they get delayed or they get moved.
And we spend 6 months arguing over the shape of the table and how many chairs will be at it.
Absolutely.
And the size of the water glasses and all that. Yes.
Yeah, this is show up to the Vatican. We're going to pray.
Wow. Well, I guess, it's hard not to get your hopes up because we have looked at what's been going on in the Middle East for decades. And any time it seems like there's a move toward peace, something else goes wrong. But still, if people seem to be feeling pretty optimistic about this, looking at the press reports.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And even in Pope Francis' recent homilies, since returning to Rome, he's been emphasizing that real peace has to begin in a personal way with local decisions. It doesn't usually stop or start from the top down in outlining giant procedures, this type of thing. So he's again trying to live by example by saying we're humans, we're leaders. It has to begin. Peace has to begin with something as simple as a prayer. So and he's been asking Catholics and the world wide really to pray for the meeting in preparation that it can be a fruitful time.
Are you going to be there to report on that meeting when it takes place?
You know, I would love to. I think certainly that I would imagine some of the most spiritual elements of that are private. And I think that Pope Francis has shown, I guess real deference to the spirituality of his post by keeping a lot of the media and the access at bay and saying, I'm going to do these things the way I want to do them and not raise my own banner and flag and try to get press for it, because he basically can just do what he wants and the press will follow, which I think is a real testimony to his leadership at this point. I'll certainly be covering it from here, as I'm sure many people will be watching and seeing what happens.
Well, he spent he had about a 45-minute press conference on the plane on his way back to Rome from the Middle East, and talked about a lot of things. And there are quite a few other topics that I want to get to here. But is what Pope Francis did in inviting the presidents of Palestine and Israel to come to the Vatican and pray with him, is this maybe reasserting a former role that the Catholic Church once played to act as an arbiter of international diplomacy? And do you see that as the Pope kind of reasserting the role of the Church in this area?
I'm not sure I would go that far. I think certainly he's asserting his role as a global peacemaker, but they haven't, from what I've been able to tell, actually hashed out any policies, right? So when you think of the Catholic Church's long history, I mean, 2,000 years of its role in politics, we can point to many other times when really the Catholic Church equaled the state, and I don't think that's where we're headed at this point. But certainly there is a place for I think renewed interest in what the papacy has to say about some of these topics, especially when you think, you know, the last decade really until Pope Francis came on the scene was so marred in much of the world's eye when it comes to the church, with the sex abuse scandals and a lot of the financial troubles. So I think part of this is shifting the direction towards, you know, who do we want to be as a church? What do we stand for? And making sure that that message gets out there.
Well, speaking of the sex abuse scandals, Pope Francis said that he was going to meet with abuse victims, and this to at least in part underscore the determination of the Vatican on a zero tolerance policy toward clergy members accused of abusing minors. How is this move seen inside the Vatican and outside? How is it? How is this viewed inside the church?
Right. Well, Pope Francis said on the plane, you know, there's no privilege for so-called daddy's boys. You know, if you have, just because you have a good relationship with your superior or even with the Vatican, if you've committed crimes, you're not going to be getting off easy. And so I think This is the first time that Pope Francis himself will be meeting with victims of abuse, but we have to remember, too, that Pope Benedict did this several times as well. So it's not the first time that a Holy Father has taken a step to meet with victims, but because of who Francis is and has been proving himself to be, certainly there will be renewed attention on that point when that meeting happens. So I think we'll have to see. I think the meeting's supposed to happen soon, mostly with folks from Great Britain and Germany. So I think we'll be watching that. I think, too, it was probably this is just my speculation, but I think it was probably a decision on his part to make that announcement on the return from the trip. You know, because he's showing the breadth of every area of life that he is stepping into. It could possibly be a reason he hasn't met with them yet, because he's not even been in office a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick call before we go to a break, and we'll hear from Reed in Clintonville next. Reed, thanks for joining us.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity. On the tail of recent comments here just moments ago, I am concerned, though, that the Catholic Church, as headed by this man, and though he's apparently making some interesting moves and saying some interesting things, is still one of the wealthiest organizations in the world, built on the backs of minorities and poor folks worldwide. And the Pope needs to speak out against all these dioceses, Milwaukee in particular, that has shielded millions and millions of dollars by moving them, in Milwaukee's case, into some sort of cemetery fund in order to not have to pay victims of abuse by priests. And, it would be good if that man in Rome would come to Milwaukee, make an appearance, and make that diocese turn over those monies. As it turns out, those poor folks have suffered physically and mentally for decades, and the Catholic Church essentially is turning its back on them. I'll just hang up and listen to any comments here on the radio.
Thanks for your call, Reed. Elizabeth Dias?
Thanks so much, Reed. It's a good question and point. And I think there are so many areas in the world that one can point to and say this is where, like on the globe, the church has failed. And as you put it, built itself up on the backs of the vulnerable. And so I think Pope Francis seems, from what I can tell, to be looking at that big picture and planning it out, in terms of where he's going to visit. And I think, from what I've heard, one of the reasons he isn't coming to the United States within the first couple of years of his papacy is because if he were to come here, it would actually have the reverse effect and show aligning with the powerful. So he's going to places like in August. He's going to Korea. And then he just announced he'll be headed to Sri Lanka and the Philippines. So as the Catholic Church is undergoing an enormous demographic shift internally, when the people who have historically held power, the Western powers, the United States, Europe, no longer are the majority, and we're seeing the people who make up the Catholic Church mostly around the world are poor and are vulnerable and have been mistreated in the past. And so there's a lot that I think he's trying to juggle, and I think we'll all be looking to see what he actually says when he meets with some of these victims. But you're right, he didn't invite anyone from the United States, any victims from the United States, to that first meeting. But I think we can also say he really is just beginning. I think because we're used to a church that makes change, as I said earlier, in decades, centuries, and even longer than that, when we have Pope Francis on the scene and we see him making very quick changes, we can all sort of want to expect something to address every problem all at the same time. And I think that's I would imagine when we have to say he's human, and hopefully we'll be hearing more about some of these very important topics soon.
Rome wasn't built in a day. I think that might be the phrase we're looking for. We're talking about Pope Francis and all the things that he's been working on in his first little more than a year as the head of the Catholic Church. Most recently, he got the presidents of Palestine and Israel to agree to meet together for prayer in the Vatican. That was a huge, huge moment. We'll see how it plays out. We're talking about that and some other things related to Pope Francis's papacy. Here on the Kathleen Dunn Show today. Elizabeth Dias is my guest. She's a correspondent for Time Magazine covering religion and politics. We'll continue our discussion with her and with you in just a moment. If you care to join us, the number is 800-642-1234. What did you think when you heard that the Pope had basically called on the leaders of Palestine and Israel to meet with him for prayer in the Vatican? What did you think when you heard that? Was that genius? Do you have hopes that this may yet produce some sort of peace in the Middle East? What about what the Pope had to say about a zero-tolerance policy for sexual abuse in the priesthood? What did you think about that? There's some other things we want to talk about as well. Scandal in the Vatican Bank that the Pope is having investigated, and a number of other issues, things that he's trying to change within the Catholic Church. If you're a Catholic, what do you think of this Pope? How has he fared for you? And if you're not a Catholic, have you changed the way you think about the Church based on some of the things that the Pope has talked about? He's been very outspoken about capitalism and what's wrong with the current economic system we have in the world from his perspective. What did you think about that? Let us know, 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org or on Facebook. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Show and leave your comment or question there. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and thanks for joining us. 800-642-1234. I almost said the wrong number, and I had a note saying we had a different number, and I wanted to be sure to give it more often. 800-642-1234. Hit a little brain fade. Maybe not enough caffeine today. It happens. You can join us at that number. Let us know what you think of Pope Francis. Before we go back into our discussion, though, as you may have heard, poet, performer, and political activist Maya Angelou died today at the age of 86 after a long illness. You might recall that Kathleen Dunn had the privilege of interviewing her last year right about this time. You can learn more about Maya Angelou and the link to Kathleen's interview on our website at WPR.org. Well, this hour we're talking about Pope Francis with Elizabeth Dias, who is a correspondent for Time based in Washington, D.C., where she covers religion and politics. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We had someone who was talking about we've been discussing the sexual abuse scandals that have plagued the Catholic Church for the last several decades. The Pope said that he would celebrate Mass with 8 abuse victims in the small church inside the Vatican guest house where he lives. The victims from various countries, including Great Britain and Germany, will be accompanied by Cardinal Sean O'Malley, Archbishop of Boston, and one of the 8 members of a Vatican commission created last year to advise the Pope on policy towards sexual abuse. Well, you talked about, Elizabeth, you talked about the 8 advisors that he's had. What's the significance of the fact that the Pope is meeting and celebrating Mass with these abuse victims in the small church inside the Vatican guest house where he lives?
You know, and I should have mentioned when our previous caller asked this question, but indeed Cardinal O'Malley from Boston is the one who is heading up the delegation that is coming to meet with Pope Francis of the sexual abuse victims. So that's the American representation at this point. But, you know, Pope Francis has been or billed as being a bit more casual and familial when it comes to these types of meetings. And so in having them really in his home and in the private chapel there, I think symbolically says it's a real heart-to-heart. And he is adopting this attitude of humility, and you know, it's not full of pomp and circumstance. It's celebrating Mass together in the same chapel where he celebrates his own Masses every day. So I think it's about tone for him, and it's about showing that the attitude of the church, the posture, really needs to be about humility and about mercy.
800-642-1234. Let's go to Green Bay and hear from Barbara next. Barbara, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to talk a little bit about how Catholics who were brought up many years ago, like I was brought up in Chicago in the grade school system and all-girls Catholic high school, and several people who have gone have over the years gotten disillusioned, and particularly the way things were handled. And so they have left, and like even my brother was molested by a cardinal in Milwaukee. And there are a lot of things that have gone on, and Catholics now want to be regenerated and renewed, and they want a sense that things are changing and there's a whole new perspective that's happening in the church. So I think that this Pope brings to people a whole sense that maybe things are new and better and people are being listened to, and there is going to be change and there is going to be new hope for everybody. So I just think St. Francis is a real breath of inspiration, and he's new and he's world savvy, you know, of what's going on.
Barbara, thanks so much for that call. Elizabeth Dias?
Yes, Barbara, I think that you're right. That's something I'm hearing from readers as I report about Pope Francis. This sentiment that he is bringing new life. I mean, it's sort of funny because it's the theme of the church, right? The resurrection, the empty tomb, new life comes out of the dark. And I think to be able to point to a leader who is the kind of parish priest that everyone wants to be able to admire and respect, especially coming out of some of these very difficult situations like you've experienced and were mentioning, It's breathing new life into areas that didn't have it before. And so, yes, I definitely think that your sentiment is widely shared.
Thanks so much for that call, Barbara. Let's go next to Scott in La Crosse. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Hi, John. I would like to actually ask your guest about a scandal that probably has never gone away. And this is prompted by a recent frontline program that she's probably familiar with, and it involves the Vatican banking scandal. And part of my, I don't particularly necessarily give this credence, but I do remember that there was a guy had a book out a few years ago, speculating that what led to the early demise of Pope John Paul I was the fact that one of his first acts upon becoming Pope was to try to look into the Vatican banking scandal. And now, from what I hear, Pope Francis is definitely concerned about the same sort of thing. And I guess my question is this a dangerous place for him to be?
Well, whenever you're messing with very powerful forces that have been around for a while, especially when it involves a lot of money, I would say yes, it's probably wise to consider all of the repercussions that could occur from that. So I think it's probably, from everything, if we look at the whole of what Pope Francis has been doing, he seems to be very aware of his choices and his actions. I would have to think that he's thinking through what the repercussions could be. So I can't predict the future on that one, but I will say it doesn't seem to have stopped him. He's still making pretty significant changes, and probably that angers. Whenever you mess up a power structure, it's likely that there could be some unwanted feedback.
Well, the Pope certainly hasn't been bashful in taking on
right.
some of the of the long term practices in some areas of the church. The
right.
Was it a cardinal from Germany with a lavish home? Well, gone. He certainly has taken on income inequality as an issue and has been very outspoken against the way capitalism is practiced in 2014 around the world and in particularly in the developed world. He certainly has not shied away from taking on powerful interests.
Right. And even 5 months, maybe even 4 months into his papacy, he issued an edict against money laundering. So he's certainly not shying away from that challenge.
800-642-1234. Line available for you if you call now. Jeremy in Eau Claire is next. Jeremy, hello.
Hi there. Thanks
Go ahead.
For having me on.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if the speaker would have any response to any sort of changes within or any leadership within the church that is kind of resisting changes brought about by Pope Francis.
Mm-hmm. I think it's something that we in the media industry are all trying to watch pretty closely. One of the challenges is if you're a leader in the Curia or in the Catholic Church, you can't really go against the Pope openly. You know, you can't. How could you go against the one who is representing, who's serving as Christ's representative on Earth? You know, and in the history passed down like that. So I think the open resistance is quieter. It doesn't mean it's not there. And so one of the things that I would look to and will be looking to here in the United States is as we prepare for Pope Francis's for the Council on Families that was supposed to happen in Philadelphia in 2015. You know, that area of the country tends to be a more conservative Catholic area, and so I think we'll be seeing then. You know, is he really changing policies? You know, what will he have to say about family, the typical sort of culture war issues that we hear about a lot, like abortion, marriage, divorce, remarriage. So once we have more information about all of that and we get to see how it plays out, then there could be more open resistance. But I think it's hard right now, you know, to pinpoint certain leaders and say this person is Pope Francis's enemy, or rising up, leading another faction. That's just not how the church tends to work in public.
Jeremy, thanks so much for your call. Well, the Pope Francis, fairly early on in his papacy, came right out and said, listen, we need to spend a lot less time talking about things like abortion and more time talking about things like how we feed the poor and take care of people. He was certainly not shy about that, and he did get some blowback in the American press from the predictably from some segments where you would expect that kind of thing. So he hasn't shied away from that issue or drawn back any of the things he said about it. Do you have reason to think that he might want to attenuate his position a little bit in that circumstance?
No, I don't think so. He doesn't seem to be one to do much backpedaling on anything so far. He sort of is a straight shooter and sticks to what he says. So
okay.
I think when you have so much history behind you of the church being perceived and acting really in ways that keep the focus on the typical culture war issues, then even a tone shift, right? I mean, that's moving the needle even just 1 or 2 degrees. It's a lot of work, and if you can do that, you know, down the road, those arrows and those rays will be much farther apart, right? So I think we can probably continue to expect that from him.
Let's take another phone call. Carolyn is with us in Madison next. Carolyn, hello.
How do you do? I understand the Pope met with a bunch of scientists and philosophers and ecologists and all kinds of people, and they talked about what the church could do for about climate change. Mm-hmm. And I just remember that he was quoted as saying something like, "We got to take care of creation because it's God's creation. Because if we destroy creation, it'll destroy us," or something like that. And I wondered if you could tell me more about that. I thought that was incredible.
Right, right. When you start hearing the Holy Father talk about climate change as one of the greatest threats to humanity, one of the biggest moral crises of our time, that certainly gets attention. And it's actually something that he brought up this weekend when he was meeting with the Ecumenical Patriarch. As you might have heard, he had a historic meeting with the Ecumenical Patriarch, who represents the Eastern Christian churches, and they met in Jerusalem, marking an important meeting between the leaders of their faith 50 years ago. And one of the things that the Ecumenical Patriarch and Pope Francis discussed was the need for their traditions to come together more and figure out more ways to protect the environment and think about how they could promote protecting the natural environment. So I thought that was, again, a very on-message point from him. You know, you can tell it's a theme that the Pope Francis really wants to continue to draw attention to. So I'm so glad you brought it up because, yes, I think we can expect to be hearing more from him and probably even more writing from him about that, because Pope Francis has been emphasizing poverty and the need to address poverty around the world, but he's been connecting poverty with what wealthy nations do when they're polluting the world, and poorer countries too, just not having a lot of the resources needed to make really proactive decisions to protect the environment. So I think this is weighs heavily on his mind and on his heart, and so I would definitely look for more of that in the days and weeks, months to come.
Carolyn, thanks so much for that call. Let's take a call next from Chelsea, who's calling us from Madison. Chelsea, hello.
Hi, thank you for having me. My question is, has Pope Francis said anything about homosexuality? I think it's a big issue, especially in our country and especially among younger Americans who are trying to find where they fit in Christianity and especially the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. So one of the keys, when I think of Pope Francis's papacy so far, I think there are five words really that mark him and put him on the map in the world's eye, and they were given last summer when he said on the plane to a group of journalists, when asked this very question, he said, "Who am I to judge?" And that immediately signaled a tone shift, that his response was not one about doctrine or about policy or positions, but it was pastoral. And it was non-judgmental. And when you have the leader of the Catholic Church saying something like that, you know, that's his go-to answer, "Who am I to judge?" I think, wow, that says something that people will remember and that has resonated through pews, not just in the United States, but really across the world. I think, you know, and after that question came on the plane, it was this impromptu press conference that Pope Francis held on the plane coming back from World Youth Day. And I believe it was one of the last questions because I think his press team probably knew, wow, what a significant statement that was, even though it was so simple and didn't announce any major changes. But it was going to have such a big impact. And, of course, we saw that then just explode across the interwebs, and when I talk to folks and hear their impressions of the Holy Father, that's certainly one of the first things that comes to mind. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Chelsea, thanks so much for that call. We'll have some more calls in just a moment. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I was trying to combine the words break and back, and I did so very unsuccessfully. When we come back after the break, we'll be talking more with Elizabeth Dias, correspondent for Time Magazine, who covers religion and politics. The genesis of this discussion, of course, the Pope's bombshell delivered on his visit to the Middle East when he got the leaders of the Palestine and Israel to agree to come to the Vatican and pray with him. That certainly will be a momentous event when it occurs. We're talking about that and a lot of other things having to do with Pope Francis and his leadership of the Catholic Church in the year or so that he has been in charge. You're invited to join the discussion. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Kathleen Dunn Show today. My guest is Elizabeth Dias, correspondent for Time Magazine in Washington, D.C. She covers religion and politics. We're talking about Pope Francis today. Let's go back to the phones and hear from Mark in Ripon. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Hi. I'd like to bring to your attention a movie that was done a couple of years ago starring Judy Dent, who was a magnificent actress. The movie is called Philomena, and it's about a young girl who has a child out of wedlock and is taken to a Catholic monastery, and the child is born and lives with her for several years, and then is abruptly and cruelly taken away and put into adoption into the United States. This is in England. And she never sees the child again. I don't want to go into the whole story. People should watch it. But what the message, I think, is I think maybe a little bit what the Pope wants to be doing, and that is make this into a step process, the first step being discovery or realization, the second step being contrition, and then the third step being closure. And I don't think anybody in any condition suffering from any injustice is going to get anywhere unless they reach the point of closure. And I think that is what the Pope would like everybody to do, and that includes people who are at war with each other. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Mark, thanks for the call. Elizabeth Dias?
Yes, thanks, Mark. I think, you know, when we look at past injustices and current injustices, whatever they are, the process of forgiveness and reconciliation might be two different things. So I think, again, as we've been talking about so far today on the show, the road ahead of Francis in leading this behemoth that is the Catholic Church is long. It's wide. It's unwieldy. Like the parts about it and all the various challenges are all kind of unwieldy. And so I think he's probably pointing us. You know, we can hear in his homilies the emphasis stressing that we should be praying for peace with one another, and that. That's not just sort of a platitude or just a saying. I think he actually really wants you to sit down with your neighbor and your family member, your estranged parent, your child suffering from an addiction, and figure out in a very real way what needs to happen. You know, if you can pray with them for peace in your own relationship. So I think there's no illusion that that's easy, but it's probably one of the reasons why he is asking everyone to do that.
Well, I don't remember where I read this or who I got this from. Someone said characterized trying to change the direction of an organization, the size and scope of the Catholic Church, akin to trying to steer the Titanic with a canoe paddle.
It's a good analogy. Yeah, it's not. Well, hopefully we won't carry the analogy all the way to its conclusion.
Well, no, speaking metaphorically only,
yeah,
right.
Right. You know, you can't really. I mean, how can you do that? So it takes some pretty skilled paddling. And, we have to remember that in the end, Pope Francis isn't really on his own. He's bringing light and bringing voice to other movements within the Catholic Church and new demographics that want to see new directions. And so I think by giving voice, for example, to the Latin American, South American church in a very real way, it gives the people on the ground more courage to speak out on their own, right? And they feel empowered. So it might be one canoe paddle, but in the end, hopefully, it will cause others to emerge around it.
Well, he's got a pretty good sized paddle there. If we want
to, yeah.
I don't want to beat this metaphor into the ground. But let's quickly take another call. I think we have time for one more. Deborah in Brown Deer is with us. Deborah, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, this is a great show. I think we're all in the same canoe, and the canoe is our planet. But and I have to say, forgiveness is something we all need to learn. So, but as far as Pope Francis, I think he's the real deal. I think he's authentic. I think of him as like the Mother Teresa, the Edward Snowden, and the Robert Frost, and the Nature Conservancy all rolled up into one. But I'm not Catholic. I grew up in an Episcopal church, but I went to Catholic church about like 7-8 years ago here in Milwaukee, St. Margaret Mary, and they sang a song that I remembered from when I went to church with my cousins in Michigan who were Catholic, and it was the song, "We are one with each other, we are one with the Lord. We are one with each other, we are one with the Lord, and we pray that our dignity may one day be restored, and they'll know we are Christians by our love. By our love. They will know we are Christians by our love." And I really feel that song is it emanates the simplicity of what Pope Francis, I think, wishes. He's just a real basic person who I think really wants to do good.
Deborah, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you, Deborah. And yes, that song has such a powerful resonance for a lot of people, and just focusing, like how you said, the simplicity of the words and the simplicity of the action of love. And, you know, in, on the one hand, it seems like simple could be bad, but simple in Pope Francis's eyes really seems to be what the world needs. And if we can move any bit in that direction, and if the church can really refocus itself in practical, tangible ways around love and the ministry of mercy and of prayer, then I think this really should only be the beginning for him.
Well, that was the song that she referenced happens to be the very first song I ever learned to play on the guitar. So,
wow!
Yeah, that was probably about 1972, I think, when I did that. Which
it's a good sign.
Yeah, it is. Now I'm going to have that in my head the rest of the day. Thanks, Deborah. Circling back to where we started the conversation, the Pope's successful gambit to get the leaders of the Palestinians and the Israelis to come to the Vatican and pray. Do you think, as we've just got about a minute left here, has the Pope found a path to peace where Washington and Europe have come up short, or are we expecting too much?
Well, we're about to find out, aren't we? It's one thing to be able to get both the Israeli president and the Palestinian president to agree to meet together within an hour, so that's certainly substantial. But as far as long-term policy goes, I think no one's really under any illusions that there's an easy fix to decades and decades of strife. But I think any injection of hope and of the possibility of peace is certainly one something to keep our eye on and to hopefully look forward to. So we will see how this plays out in the coming weeks at the Vatican.
And you'll be reporting on it from Washington.
Yes, I will.
Okay, and we'll look forward to reading your reports. Thank you so much
for
joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Elizabeth Dias is a correspondent for Time Magazine, where she covers religion and politics. She joined us today from Washington. Marika Saval produced this hour of programming. We had on-air production help from K.P. Whaley and Dave Potratz. By the way, here's what's coming up tomorrow in this hour. A recent study concluded that religious people will be a minority in many developed countries by the year 2041, and that the Christian right might have a major role in hastening the decline of religion in the United States. Tomorrow at this time, we will ask the question, is secularism replacing Christianity? My guest is Barry Cosman, professor at Trinity College and the director of the Institute for the Study of Secularism and in Society and Culture. That's tomorrow at this time. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You've been listening to the Kathleen Dunn Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.